Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 70 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. It's been another great 2 weeks in the gaming capital of the world, Indianapolis, Indiana. How you doing, Cody?
Doing all right. Wish that hurricane that's down south would somehow come to Indiana. I don't know how that would work, but...
What?
I want some rain.
Are you serious? You just requested for a hurricane to come to
our... Well, I mean, you know, if a hurricane got here, it wouldn't be a hurricane, but, you know, it'd be a heavy storm, but...
Yeah, well, we didn't get the earthquake either.
We didn't, no. That's hip. Peru got an earthquake today.
It's really?
Lots of crazy stuff. There.
My mom actually called me. She lives in Virginia Beach, and she said, I was standing in line at the Chick-fil-A, and things started shaking. So I got, like, the little East Coast news scoop there from my mom.
You know, that's not the most dreadful news that's come out of Indianapolis, because Peyton Manning may not start game one of the NFL season.
That's scary.
I know there are certain members of our listenership that are like, oh no, here comes the football again. Sorry. But this is big.
You're a Game On listener. You got to get ready for
That's
it.
That's right. Okay? It is the season. Yeah. So.
But, you know, in the meantime...
We got to play games, get our mind off of it.
We're in the post-Gen Con period here where we've got a few new games that we got at the convention and... You know, things are kind of wound down from the four intense days of gaming. But we got, you know, still gaming stuff to talk about here. Cody, what are we talking about this episode?
We're going
to
talk about gaming in public.
In public.
So we're going to talk about taking your favorite games and taking them to the restaurant or to the bar or to the library or to other social places and showing your geek outside. And it's kind of an interesting topic because I know a lot of people are really adverse to doing that. So
there's some pros and cons.
There are some pros and cons to it. So we'll talk about that. We've also got a great review of a new hotness. What we got, John?
Oh, it's if you listen to any other gaming podcast, they probably talked it to death and we've talked it up quite a bit. But we're going to give you the full review of Quarriors, the new dice building or deck building with dice game from WizKids that just came out at Gen Con this year. So full review of that. We've got lots of other stuff to talk about in the Game On inbox. And hey, it all starts off with a rundown, right?
Now.
All right, well, it's time for the rundown where we're going to tell you about everything we've been doing in gaming the last couple of weeks. But first... As always, it's time for our due penance to Dan the Man at Myriad Games. Myriad Games sponsors Game On with Cody and John on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere.
Everywhere.
Even...
Across the globe.
Yes. Even after Gen Con, when you need those new games that just came out at Gen Con, who's going to hook you up but Dan at Myriad Games?
That's right.
Myriad Games... In addition to being a great local game store in New Hampshire, as we've said many times before about our
live
sponsor,
free or die. By the way, it's been a while since we've
indeed they live free or die. But they also have this great MVP membership where you know if you sign up and have a certain amount of money sort of drafted out of your account and you know you get Myriad money for. I'm never as good at explaining this as you are. It's like a monthly program, right?
Yeah.
Cody's kind of the Cody knows the Myriad thing a little more streamlined.
Yeah, you so you pick your level of membership. And it's, you know, like, you know, bronze or gold or whatever. And
titanium,
unobtainium and all that. So whatever amount that is, say it's $50 a month, then, you know, that'll get deducted at the start of every month. And then you get that as Myriad money, which you can use to, you know, purchase games and all sorts of things. You get all sorts of great bonuses. And you can check out the full list at myriadgames.com. But basically, the MVP membership, you get... You know, first stab at all these new things coming out and just a lot of perks. And it's worth checking out even if you're not in the New Hampshire area. So check out myriadgames.com and get your MVP membership today.
You know, every time that I send Dan an email, you know, saying, hey, Dan, could you put this on my order for this month? He's always very good about, you know, writing back and saying, oh, hey, you know, by the way, John, I didn't know if you knew that this was coming out soon. You know, can we reserve that for you? And he always – he seems like he's known me for long enough now that he can pick out things that he knows that I'm going to like. And, you know, you may think, well, you know, John knows Dan pretty well and they're friends. But But it's really, I think, part of Dan's service, part of Myriad Games' service. It's not just Dan's; it's the whole deal. You know, being able to provide that kind of service to know the customers and be able to build those relationships. So, Myriad Games, can't say enough good things about them.
Your friend in the gaming business.
That's right. Okay, so it's now time for the rundown. Cody, what have you been playing the last couple weeks?
My rundown is pitiful. I don't know if it's the post-con malaise or I haven't really gotten back into it, back up to speed here. But really, the only game I've played, board game wise, would be I got from Myriad Games on GameShare, another great perk, is the Game of Thrones living card game. You know, we reviewed this way back in episode of Game On with Cody.
Yeah, I love that episode.
And, one of my favorites. And at the time, I hadn't read any of the books or seen the TV show or anything, didn't know anything. I thought it was an okay game, but I didn't get the story behind it. So I'm like, well, now that I'm semi up to date on the books, I'll get this and try it out. And I've played a two-player game of it. It's interesting because I think it's a good game, but to me, if you can't play it four-player, I don't know if it's worth playing. I mean, I almost kind of want to go back and see what I said way back then, but
because four players, you have
those roles, yeah, that you select.
Chess, kind of chess pieces that you're pulling, and
And two-player, it's just really just magic, like it's just kind of heads up. So, yeah, it's all right.
Okay, we'll get that to the table a couple more times.
Yeah, I've played a few Pathfinder Society scenarios in the area. I talked about that at Gen Con.
Back in organized play for Pathfinder, huh?
I'm dipping my toe in the water. The experiences have been pretty good, so I'm keeping that up. And kind of in the non-gaming realm, I'm getting geared up for the launch of the new 52 reboot for DC Comics. You know, I've just started this kind of comics renaissance, and the newest title in the 52 Justice League drops next week, so I'm excited about that. I found out comic shops do midnight releases, which is new to me.
Really?
They're like, yeah, we're going to have a pizza with 52 on it. And
do you dress up or something?
I don't know. I might go just to find out.
You should.
Yeah, it's like I like to be the well-rounded geek, so it's kind of seeing these different aspects is interesting. But pitifully, and I really hope starting tonight after we record, we're going to play some games, and I hope that kickstarts, if you will, gaming again, because it's kind of, I've just been in a lull.
So you're telling me that's it?
I'm telling you that's it.
Wow.
Now, you've brought some weak rundown to this house before, sir, so I...
It's a similarly weak rundown. I have a few more games, but not that many.
I know.
Well, one that you forgot, because we played it right after we recorded the previous episode, is we did play Elder Sign again.
Oh, yeah.
And we played a three-player game of that, and you know, we'd said in our review of Elder Sign, and it's also been shown on BoardGameGeek, a lot of the forum threads there, that people are concerned that the game is too easy.
Yeah.
And that you'd sort of tear through it. Well, in this game we played a couple weeks ago, we proved that you can lose this game and lose it terribly.
That's true.
And so, you know, we played that game, and it was funny because most of the time that feeling of tension of, oh my gosh, we're going to lose, this is terrible, I don't like that about cooperative games. In this game, because I've played two or three times and it was so easy, when we started losing things, I kind of looked at Cody and said, oh, this feels right.
Yeah.
This feels right now. Yeah. And when we got completely, and you know what? I take that back, Cody. We won that game.
Yeah. But I mean, we got to the point where we had to fight the great old one.
Right. Yeah. And so we had to actually fight the great old one, which is a really difficult fight. And we did it sort of on the last minute die roll. So it was a lot of fun.
It was a stand
up. I just totally lied
moment.
To you guys. I thought it was, we lost. No, but but it was a struggle. You know, it didn't feel like it was. We just breezed through the game and just went through a bunch of, you know, dice rolls and you're done. Still a great game, and, you know, one that we want to get to the table a lot more often. One we definitely both recommend to you guys and gals. Let's see. We also played Eminent Domain, which is the new game from Tasty Minstrel Games, which my wife thinks that's a terrible name for a game company.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But
hope you didn't kickstart it.
I did kickstart Eminent Domain.
Yeah, you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, and got my copy at Gen Con, thankfully, and played a game of that at the convention, and it was very clunky, and it was really hard to figure out what exactly you were doing. Basically, the idea in the game is that you're trying to get the most points, what they're calling prestige points. And you're playing cards in a sort of deck building fashion, but it's kind of like a combination between Dominion and Race for the Galaxy and a little bit of Glory to Rome kind of thrown into it. So on your turn, you will play a card out of your hand, which is called your action, and then there's a tableau of cards or a stacks of cards in the middle of the board. And you'll take one of those and do the roll that's on that card. So there's two things, action and roll. Mm-hmm. And you'll do that roll, and then you can play cards out of your hand to boost the ability of that roll and make it more powerful. And then everybody around the table gets the opportunity to do that roll as well. Or they can choose to dissent and draw a card instead. And so, you know, the idea is that you're trying to survey planets, which are cards, and then settle those planets so that you can then put resources on those planets that you can then trade in for victory points. There's some technology and research cards that you can play that make things a little bit more interesting. I found that I think it takes two or three plays to sort of understand what you're doing. In the same way that Race for the Galaxy is like that. You need a couple of plays to sort of
understand. Or even like Glory to Rome or Innovation.
You need a couple of plays.
Those kind of heavier card games.
But one thing that Eminent Domain has in its favor is that I still feel like unless I play Race for the Galaxy regularly, I'll forget the iconography and I'll forget kind of what's going on with the game.
Yeah.
This game, the iconography is very simple.
It's a gorgeous game.
The art design is very, very well done. I think they spent their Kickstarter money pretty well for this game. So I would recommend it. I think it's pretty good. In the future, we may do a full review on it. Not sure. It depends on after we play it and what Cody thinks of it. But I really like this one. I played it I played a 4-player game of that at the Game On Game Night and enjoyed that. And then I also played a 2-player game with Rachel, my wife, and she liked it pretty well too. But I could sort of see that the first half of the game, she had no idea what she was doing. And mm-hmm. then it sort of started to click of, oh, this is the process I'm supposed to be going through here. So, it's a good one. I think you should also check out. Playing a lot of HeroScape with my son. That has sort of come back to life in my house. Cause, the big gray bucket of HeroScape that I have has been sitting dormant in the closet for probably more than a year now.
Wow.
And Ethan just expressed a desire one day to play some HeroScape. And the way we've been doing it is I just sort of hand him the bucket of figures. And I give him the stack of, well, I don't even give him the stack of cards. I just have him pick out the figures that he wants. And then he usually picks out about 800 points worth of figures. And I was like, okay, son, well, we need to kind of cull this down a little bit. And we get it to about 300 or 400 points. And then we play. So he's got all the full rules down, and he's really enjoying it. And so I've beat him twice now, but it's been pretty close. Yeah. And so he's itching for another rematch on that one. So loving HeroScape. I was looking on eBay to see, is it difficult to find HeroScape stuff? Is it, since it's out of print, mm-hmm. would it be difficult to get into? And not really. There's a lot of people who are selling their collections, and they even have the starter sets. And you might have to put a little bit of money into it, but it's one that you can still find pretty easily. And I would definitely recommend it as a good entry-level miniatures game. Let's see. Played some Magic Commander.
Oh.
The new multiplayer version of Magic. It's not really that new. It's a variation on something called Elder Dragon Highlander, which was a variant that was created several years ago. The idea being that you create a 100-card deck that is has unique cards in it. So it's like Highlander, there can be only one, mm-hmm. one of each card, each named card. And this is fun for multiplayer play. It's also fun for someone like me who's not much of a deck builder. So I'm never thinking of, well, I need 4 Dark Banishings and 4 Doom Blades to be able to make this deck work. I'm just like, oh, this card looks cool. I'd like to play this one. So you only get one of each of those cards. Plus you get a commander card that sort of starts out on the board and you cast it from something called the command zone and it comes into play. And then if it ever dies, then it just goes back to the command zone. So you always have access to it at any point during the game. Wizards of the Coast, the marketing and sales machine that they are, has created a bunch of pre-constructed decks for this. There's 4 of them. They're a little bit pricey. They retail for $30, but it's 100 unique cards, and these are powerful, powerful cards. You're not just getting commons and uncommons. It's a lot of rares and legendaries and all that kind of stuff. So very, very high-end, powerful stuff. And it's a lot of fun. It's kind of comical if you played Magic for a long time. And I'm used to those games where you kind of slog it out and you put down 15 creatures, and you're just sending stuff, to your opponent every single time. In this game, things can compile so quickly that, you might find that, this turn I have 4 creatures out and they're each 42/42s, because of all the different abilities that you have. There's one particular deck I'll just mention real quickly. I know this isn't really a Magic podcast, but the deck called Devour for Power, which has to do with
it's like a Tony Robbins event.
Devour for Power, and it's It has to do with cards that are in your opponent's graveyard. So you might play a card that says that this creature's power and toughness is equal to the number of creatures that are in opponent's graveyards. So if you're playing a two-player game, that's one thing. But if you're playing a four-player game of this, you know, and each of your opponents has four creatures in their graveyard, then that's a 12-12 creature that's coming out there. So these things get very powerful very quickly. And so it's a ton of fun. And, you know, if you're, you want just kind of a casual Magic variant that you can play, I've been playing this at lunch with some buddies at work and just been having a real good time with it. So the deck that I have is called Heavenly Inferno, which is angels and demons and
Da Vinci Code. And
yeah. And it's a lot of really good stuff there. So enjoy that one. Last game I played, which is one we're going to be reviewing later, is Couriers. I got to play that one also with my wife, Rachel, and the two-player game of that. And she's a very big Dominion fan. She enjoys that game. And so she liked that one a lot, too. And, of course, as you'll see later, I really enjoy the game. So that is pretty much it. Yes, Mr. Jones, he's raising his hand.
That's right. I'm going to buzz in because I forgot. I was sitting here racking my brain. I knew I played more games than that, and I did.
Okay.
I did a game night with my buddy Darren, some friends of his. Played a lot of new games that are new to me, so I'm going to rapid fire this. I played.
There was a whole game night that
there was a whole game night. I just forgot.
What happened? Was there lots of drinking?
I don't know, but I woke up naked somewhere and I don't remember.
Okay.
Started out with the Resistance, which I had played before.
Nice.
Played it with the expansion.
Uh huh.
Still don't like the expansion.
Still don't like it.
Still don't like it, but it was fine. Played the Resistance. Played a few games of a game called I'm the Boss.
Oh.
Which is it's an old like Sid Saxon game, and it's about negotiating and getting the best deal and bringing people into the deal and kicking people out. And if you have the right group for it, it's a lot of fun because, I mean, you're backstabbing people and it's kind of this live action thing. You're like, all right, I'm looking for one more. You're in for 2 million. Okay. We'll do. And it's just making deals and all that.
Yeah,
and
that sounds
a
fun.
Lot of fun. Like to play that again. And then finally I got to play the, don't know if you've heard of Intrigue before.
Oh yeah. I hear it's like Dominion, the card, not Dominion, Diplomacy, the card
yes,
game.
Yes. Again, with the right group of people, I think it's good, but the one thing I kind of don't like about it is that I don't really consider it backstabbing. It's more like front stabbing because there's really not any long, intricate plots.
Uh-huh.
You know, to put it very succinctly, you have, you know, like a manor with four different areas in it, and people will send their workers to you to place there. And mm-hmm. one, you know, they're worth like 1,000, 3,000, 6,000, and 10,000. And you work out the deal beforehand. So say, I might say to John, I'm going to send my worker. I would like you to put him in the six. I will give you $8,000 for it. And then, you know, I make that offer and the money's on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the money and then immediately you decide where it goes.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there's sometimes a lot of Scroogers like, all right, I'm giving you 15 for you to put in this 10 and I'll give you the same privilege when it comes back around. And then you take their 15 and put the guy in the one, you know, and just completely.
Boy, it seems like you get punched pretty quickly in that game. I mean,
yeah, I mean, we had a pretty good group of people play it, but that's the thing. It was okay, but it was front stabbing. It was just, you know,
it wasn't like you found out later.
Right.
Oh, you did that to me. It's like, yeah. You just find out right away.
Okay. It was fun, but I'm the Boss. That flew under the radar. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, okay.
And I did get a game of War Machine in.
We
played that last weekend. And
you were holding out on me.
I know. I was like, I played more than that.
Yeah.
And that was fun. I'm hoping to play that at Extra Life when we go to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And kind of play with the pros because I still want to make sure we're getting all the rules right.
Are you taking your models with you?
Yeah, I think so. So okay. I'm going to take that.
Because you're taking the road trip in there. Yeah, that's
so I might take yours too. And
That'd
we'll
be great.
Play up there.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
Okay, now I'm done for real.
Okay. Any other gaming or geeky related things you've been doing? Any reading? Any cool TV shows? I'm setting you up because I have a couple.
Oh, I see. Haven't read much. I'm still kind of on. I haven't really started book five of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Hmm.
I may take your suggestion, give Dresden Files another go, just because I need something light. I can't really get into heavy George R. R. Martin right now. And TV shows, I'm watching West Wing reruns because that's the greatest show ever.
So. It is the greatest show ever. I agree. Speaking of Dresden, I mean, that's what I'm still trying to kind of get through that book series. I think they're on, I want to say the 12th or 13th book that just came out called Ghost Story. And so I'm on the book right before that one called Changes. I'm about halfway through that one, and the series is just fantastic. I'm sorry, I know I've mentioned the Dresden Files several times here, but it is a great, great series. It is light, I think. And if you are just, if you're interested in a series like this, where it's about Harry Dresden, who's a professional wizard who's living in downtown Chicago, and it's got sort of that gumshoe investigative, you know, helping the police. It's got sort of like Law and Order meets Wizards meets Lord of the Rings or whatever, and and so it's very modern. It's not like, you know, he's walking around with a well, he sometimes has a robe, but he doesn't look a long beard or a hat or anything like that. But if you want to get into the series, the first book's called Stormfront, and I'll give you this warning that as far as I'm understanding correctly, the book Stormfront was Jim Butcher, the author's first book ever. Like, it was his first novel.
Oh, wow.
And so you can tell when you read it that it's got a little bit of first novel clunkiness to it. It's almost like watching the pilot to a really good TV show. You know, the TV show itself is awesome, but the pilot, you know, even you would say probably West Wing pilot, a little bit shaky.
Not great. Yeah.
Right. And so it's kind of like that. So if you can get through that first book, as the series progresses, they just get better and better and better, and you just feel like you know this character of Harry Dresden so well. I'm just very, very impressed with it. And on the TV front, I'm watching Doctor Who. I think the season 6 should be coming back pretty soon from its hiatus, from its summer break. But in the meantime, I've been going back and trying to watch all of the seasons from the reboot that started back in 2005. So season 1 of the reboot, which was the 9th Doctor, I just finished watching all of that. And I thought it was really, really good. And I think a lot of people have criticized the 9th Doctor as not being a very good, of the Doctors not being that great. But I thought he was really good. Christopher Eccleston's the actor who plays him. But I really enjoyed it. And so now I'm just now starting season 2 with David Tennant as the 10th Doctor, who on the internet lots of folks have said that he is the best Doctor. And so far, so good. So I would highly recommend, if you haven't gotten into Doctor Who, I'm very much a late adopter of Doctor Who because the show's been around forever. I would recommend that one.
I'm good, still fighting it.
Good geeky fun.
I'm still fighting
it. You're worried that it's too British, aren't you?
I
and no disrespect to those who live in the UK, but you know, that just might be humor that you're going to miss, right?
Yeah,
but,
and it's kind of, you know, I'm an Anglophile in a lot of things, but it's British humor. I've just never, like Monty Python, their movies are okay. Like the TV show Flying Circus, I just don't think that's funny. I don't know. It's like, it's a man in a woman's dress. Oh, you know, I'm like, okay.
I think you'll find that it's not really like that. Okay. Because at its core, it's a science fiction show. It's not really a comedy,
mm-hmm.
and the little bits of comedy that they throw in are less British and more just geeky and fun.
And it's all on Netflix. What I would need to get started?
Yes, they have all of the new series on Netflix, and as well as some of the specials. I think they have even some of the older series going back in like the 80s and 70s, because the show's been around for that long. But yeah, I would recommend start off in 2005, series 1. With Christopher Eccleston, the 9th Doctor, and you can't go wrong.
Let me throw this down for you.
Go ahead.
How about we make a gentleman's agreement here?
What am I going to have to watch?
You're going to have to watch, when it comes in October, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Clearly the best of the Star Treks.
Okay, well, listeners, I've had Cody has all but one of the seasons of Deep Space Nine on DVD, right? Mm-hmm. And I've had season 1 at my house for more than a year now, probably,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're saying that I need to watch that.
Yes. You can skip season 2, because it's terrible.
Okay.
But just do season 1, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I will make that deal with you, that if you'll watch at least the first season of Doctor Who, then I will watch Deep Space Nine.
Done.
All right.
DS9 you heard it here, the best. Listeners. That's right.
All right. So is that the rundown?
That's the rundown.
Awesome.
So many episodes ago, we talked about kind of the Dominion effect, how once Dominion dropped and all these things came out, that deck building was the new hotness, and that all of these games, you had Thunderstone and Nightfall and Heroes of Graxia and all sorts of stuff. Remember Heroes of Graxia?
I'm trying to forget it.
That was a terrible game. But
it's pretty terrible.
So we were kind of wondering what the next step would be.
And we tried to act like it was a good game, though.
Did
like, we tried. Not like we were lying, but we wanted it to be good.
We gave it due diligence, but this is not Heroes of Graxia.
No, no.
What we have is Quarriors, which is not really a deck-building game, but a dice-building game, but it builds on a lot of the things that other deck-building games have that have come before. It uses those mechanics. So this was really highly anticipated, because it's like, well, dice make most everything better, I would agree. So Quarriers, we're going to tell you whether it is the next step or if it's a Graxian step down.
That's become an official adjective, right?
Graxian. That's right. So, John, hit it.
All right. Quarriers from the folks at... Oh, little Quarriers background music. I like that.
I said hit it. I thought there should be some music.
Okay. This is a game from WizKids, which WizKids has had this weird resurgence in the last couple of years. I think they went out of business or something, and they ended up getting bought by this NECA or NECA company, NECA. Yeah. Anyway, they're coming back with a vengeance because they not only have Quarriers out now, they have they got the Star Trek, I guess they got the Star Trek license for some things, and made the Star Trek Expeditions game designed by Kinesia. They had the Star Trek Fleet Captains game.
Don't get me started. $100 and the ships aren't painted. No, no, sir. I mean, and otherwise I would buy that game. It's got the Defiant in there. It's got Sovereign class in there. It's got all of these ships that I love from Star Trek.
They're nice.
And I'm a ship nerd.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Unpainted, $100. No, no, sir. The line must be drawn here this far and no further.
Well done.
Thank you.
That is a little bit much, but that's another discussion for,
sorry, another day. I just, something hit me. Back to your little dice game.
So that game was huge at Gen Con, but the other game that was huge that people were waiting in line for was Quarriers. And you know, we had the opportunity to play this game long before it came out, thanks to our good friend Jeremy Salinas,
Dragon Sugar Strike. Daddy himself.
That's right, who had an advanced copy. So we've been playing this for quite some time.
He's got
time
an advanced
now.
Copy of Descent 3rd Edition. That's you know, right. It's like not even second.
Hasn't been
know,
even designed right. yet. Yeah, you know, but so Quarriers is, as the box says, and it comes in this nice cube shaped tin.
I don't care for the tin.
I like the tin.
I didn't care for it with Forbidden Island. I don't care for it now.
Oh, I like the tin quite a bit, yeah. Because it looks like a die. As a matter of fact, it even has like the little die markings on the top of it.
It is quite unwieldy, I would say. It is not very wieldy, at all.
Not wieldy. It's not friendly to your game shelves. I will agree with that.
And they get dented. I mean, my copy was new and it had a dent in the bottom.
See, but this is now in sort of a... it's like in a series now because I have a version of Liar's Dice that is also in a cube that's shaped like a die. So,
science pop quiz: what's the periodic table symbol for tin?
Tin is SN.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
That's like the one part of science I know is
University of Texas class of 99. All right, so
hook 'em.
Quarriers is listed as on the box as the game of uber strategic hexahedron monster combat mayhem. And it is a deck-building game with dice. And the idea in the game is that you're trying to be the player who has the most glory, or depending on whether you're reading in the rules, quarry, at the end of the game. And
I'll address all this later.
you have opinions already.
I'm loading the rifle. It's fine. Okay. You keep going.
You sit over there and load the rifle. And so in a two-player game, it's the first player to 20 glory, three players is to 15, a four-player game is to 12. So 2 to 4 player game, and it's going to play in about, you know, probably half an hour, 45 minutes at the most, yeah. I think, if you're kind of playing nice and quickly. But the idea here is that you're going to start off with a hand of dice, or a deck of dice that are going to go into a bag. You get 4 cloth bags. You get 4 little tokens that are in the same colors as the bags to be your markers on the scoreboard. And then the game comes with 130 custom etched dice. These dice are just a little bit smaller than your normal size D20. They're not like the little tiny dice D6. That you would... Oh, sorry. Yeah, D6.
Man, you think Quarriers is D20s? 130 yeah, D20s. Tiny symbols.
The rule book would be like, you know, 150 pages. D6s, yeah. And they're a little bit smaller than your normal size, you know, game D6s that you would see. But they're etched, so they're not painted or screen printed on. They have actual etching on them, and they have all these different symbols on them, which at first look in the box might seem a little bit daunting. Of, oh my gosh, it's all these symbols. I think there's some game that was out, what's it called?
Dragon Dice.
And I sat through...
I was going to make that joke when you had the 150-page rule book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Dragon Dice.
I've played a demo of that, and it was daunting, to say the least. This game is, even though it has a lot of symbols, they're really easy to understand. So the way you're going to set the game up is that you're going to have your own deck of dice that's going to go into the bag there. It's I believe it's 12 dice to start off with. And then you're going to set up on the board a series of 13 cards, and then there's going to be dice that go along with those cards. So whereas in a game like Dominion or Thunderstone, you have stacks of cards in the middle, here you're going to have 1 card per kind of die, and then a stack of 5 dice. And so there's a whole variety of dice and cards in the game. And for each kind of die that you have, you might have a multiple of three or four different cards to choose from. And they'll have, you know, different strengths to them. So you might have like the, you know, for example, a creature like the Defender of the Pale. You might have the Strong Defender of the Pale and the Legendary Defender of the Pale. And they'll be slightly different abilities. So you're going to sort of randomize these when you lay them out. There's two main kinds of cards, the creature cards and the spell cards. You're going to lay out seven creature cards and three spell cards. In addition, you're also going to have three cards that are just sort of your basic cards that are in every game. Those basic cards are basic Quiddity. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what that is in a second. It's kind of like your money. The Assistant, which is the most basic creature in the game, and the Portal, which is a special kind of die that will allow you to pull more dice out of your bag. So you're going to start off the game with 12 dice, 8 of those white Quiddity dice, and then 4 assistants, and you're going to throw those into your bag. The way that the game works is that you're going to draw out, is it 5 or 6? I couldn't remember. I think it's 6. You're going to draw 6 dice out of your bag, and you're going to roll them. And you know, you're going to look at the dice that you've rolled, and the ultimate goal here is you're trying to get creatures out in front of you. And then once those creatures are out in front of you, they're going to attack every player that's in the game, every other player. And if you can get all the way back around to your turn and you still have creatures in front of you, then each of those creatures is going to score you a certain number of glory points. And that's shown on the card that goes along with the dice that's in the middle of the table. So that's the basics of kind of how it works. So you're going to roll your dice, and then you're going to look at what the faces of your dice. And each of the creature cards, creature dice, is going to have a symbol to represent that creature. But it's not going to be every symbol on the die. So every creature is going to have some faces on the die that represent Quiddity. Quiddity is represented by a little teardrop shape. That's just sort of your money. So even if you buy a really strong creature, when you roll that die, you may not actually get the creature. You might just get some money, you know, some Quiddity. But if you get those creatures there, on the die itself, it's going to have a particular cost of how much it costs to cast that creature or to put it in front of you into your active area. So you're going to take your Quiddity dice and, you know, and spend those Quiddity amount, that's, like I said, kind of your money, to bring a die in front of you into your like active area to cast it. And so then you'll set those dice aside into a discard pile, the Quiddity dice that you've spent. And then any creatures that you put out in front of you will then attack every other creature, every other player. The creatures have a attack and a defense value, which is also on the die. And you know, I said these dice are a little bit smaller than the average D6s. One other thing that's nice is that on the card itself that goes along with a particular stack of dice in the middle of the table, it shows at the bottom of the card all 6 faces of the dice. So you can see very clearly, well, for one thing, your odds of getting a particular symbol, and then you can also see the different attack and defense values of the different creatures. So after you roll your dice, you will summon your creatures to the front there, and then those creatures are going to attack, and they'll attack other creatures. And if you have a strength value that's greater than their toughness or defense, then it'll destroy that creature. It's a very simple mechanic for dealing damage. And if a defender has multiple creatures out, then that defender gets to choose which creature will block first. And you know, it'll take as much damage as it can until it dies, and then the rest of the damage will kind of carry over. So if you think of things in sort of magic terms, every creature in this game has trample. the damage will continue to carry on even after you've blocked with one die. So after you do that attacking step, then you have an opportunity to buy one die from the center. And the dice cost various amounts. It could be as low as 1, which is if you want to buy another assistant, then that only costs 1. Could go as high as 9. Some of the most powerful cards cost that much. So you'll buy one die. Much like Dominion and every other deck building game, all of the dice that you've used, except for the creatures that are still alive in front of you, all of those dice will go to your discard pile, and then you'll wait until your turn comes around again, and then you'll draw up to 6 again. If you ever run out of dice in your bag, you'll just take all the dice that are in your discard pile, toss them into your bag, and shake them up, and draw what you need. So the game will progress along to the different players, and if it comes back around to your turn and you still have a creature alive, then you will look on the card for that creature or on the die itself, and it'll tell you how much... actually, I don't think it's on the die.
No, it's on the card.
Yeah,
it's only on the card.
Sorry, yeah, on the card will tell you how much glory you're going to get for that. You'll adjust that on the score track. And then as an additional sort of reward for getting glory, for every creature that gets glory, you can take and cull one die out of your deck.
There. I always forget that.
Yeah, so if you have too much Quiddity or too much of whatever kind of die, you can, for every die, you can cull one die.
It auto-chapels.
It auto-chapels, yeah, for the Dominion fans out there. And then those creatures that earned you the glory will then get discarded, you know, and they'll go back into your deck there. But that is the basics of how it works. There's also cards that are spells. I mentioned there's seven creatures and three different spells. The spells you can ready at the beginning of your turn after you've rolled your dice, those don't cost anything to cast or to summon or whatever. You can just set them in front of you, and then you can use them at the appropriate time, either on that turn or on a later turn. So those can be really nice abilities. Some of them just earn you glory. Some of them will modify the attack of another die. Some are defensive, things like that. So lots of variety in those dice. And like I said, each set of dice comes with multiple cards that have different abilities on them. Some of the dice faces will have little asterisks on them, little stars, and those stars will mean different things depending on what card you're using in the game. The game will continue until someone reaches that glory number, and that is Quarriors.
Boom.
Yeah. So what do you think of Quarriors?
I think it's an interesting model, because if they, it makes expansions, or at least small expansions, very easy for them, because they just have to print cards. You know, the way they've built it is they don't necessarily have to make new dice for expansions. You know, they could release these mini card expansions and it would work fine. I think it's a good game. I really enjoy it. The theme I do not care for. I just don't get it. I mean, it's Quiddity, and it's this goofy kind of fantasy stuff. And
it's like, it's kind of cartoony, but I mean the artwork on the cards is it's not as dark as Magic, but it's not as cartoony as Pokemon. It's sort of in the middle there. It's got this sort of wackiness to it, mm-hmm. and tongue-in-cheek weirdness. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it's kinda weird. I just don't get it. And this kind of actually plays into an email we got. And to sum up that email, he asked if it does it stay awesome. You know, just, you know, it's like, I hear, you know, that, you know, with a 4-player game, it just ends too quickly, and you know, it's just very. He says it could get very repetitive. I still think it's worth it, and it stays awesome, as it were. But I think the glory levels are set too low, especially in a 4-player game. Mm-hmm. I would suggest you take it all the way to 20. In a 4-player game, because a lot of the time we found when we played that just when you're getting your machine going, getting your system going, the game ends.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of, well, okay, you know. And when you play to 20, I think you can really get some good strategies going, and the game moves fast enough, and the fact that when you attack everyone.
You have to.
Yeah, you have to.
Just to clarify, to put a point on it there, it's not like you even have a choice. You actually have to.
And that's kind of nice, because, you know, it prevents ganging up or, you know, something like that. So, I think if you increase that glory limit, you can breathe some more life into it and extend your games.
Yeah. I was also mentioned that another way the game can end is if there are four or more empty creature cards. Like if all the dice have been taken from four creature cards, that also will end the game at the end of that round.
Yeah.
I kind of like the artwork. I don't really have too much of a problem with it.
I think the art's fine. I just think the theme is just like, I'm going to use my Quiddity, and I'm going to get my, I don't know, a bunch of other stuff that starts to cue you.
It's okay.
It's fine.
I like the dice. I think those are cool. I think some people have complained about the icons being difficult to read. There's only a couple of dice where it's even in question, and it's really not that big of a deal. Yeah. So, I have also heard lots of other reviews that just say, well, there's just no decisions in the game. All you're going to do is roll your dice. You're going to summon all the creatures that you can. You're going to attack with all of them, and then you're going to buy whatever the most expensive die is, and then you're done, you know? And yeah, I guess you can play it that way, but I don't know. I think it's, it's light. It's supposed mm-hmm. to be light, you know, and any kind of a dice rolling game is going to be that way. And I think that it's a lot of fun for what it is. I personally think, and I have a bit of a bone to pick with gamers.
Uh-oh, effing gamers, here we go.
About dice rolling games. I am so tired of reading posts on the internet of people saying, you know, oh, I just don't like this game because it's just so much luck. And anything that has dice rolling in it just gets a bad rap sometimes about, you know, the mm-hmm. there's no real decisions in the game. And you know, you can play in your strategy, but then the dice roll will screw you. And I just get over yourselves, okay? I mean, that you have to understand that when a game has this much of a dice element to it, it's supposed to be light and lucky and fun and lighthearted. I mean, I think that might be why the theme is so cartoony, is because they weren't going to make this game with some real heavy theme, you know, yeah. that because it just wouldn't work with this kind of thing. You know, one thing that's different about this game from Dominion is that you have a double luck element here. You know, you have the you know, in any deck building game, you have that luck element of what's going to come up in your deck. You're trying to build it so you get the best odds of getting the cards that you want. But you never know. You might have a bad draw one time. You don't get any of the cards that you want. So that's bad luck, right? In Couriers, you have the same problem that you might have a bad draw of dice. But then you have an additional luck element of you have to roll those dice. And so maybe you get the best hand. You get all of your 9-cost awesome dragon creatures in your hand. And you roll them and they all come up with 1 quiddity, you know?
Yeah.
And there's some things you can do to re-roll. And there's some little picky rules that we didn't mention. But you know, there's a double luck element there. So if you don't like that, then you're not going to like this game.
To quote Tom Servo, bite me, it's fun.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let's break it down into our buy points, try points, and deny points. What buy points do you have for Couriers?
The production value, I think, is definitely a buy point.
Yes.
It's really nice quality cards. I think the rule set is makes a lot of sense. It's not difficult to understand. You get 130 custom dice in the game, in the base game, and there's enough variety in the cards and in the dice that I think you can play this a number of times and it will not feel stale. So that's a big buy point for me.
I completely agree. And the like I mentioned earlier, having it, you know, card-based to a point, it was a very smart idea.
Agreed.
So, try points?
The price, I think, is a try point.
I think it's a little hefty.
Retails for $50, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's 130 custom dice. So, just thinking of the production costs of making things like that, you can see that that's why they have to charge that, is it just costs a lot of money to get dice printed.
It's certainly not $100 for unpainted shows.
It's not that bad. No. But I think this could, for the lightness that it is, it could drive a lot of people off because it's, you know, it's a quick game, and mm-hmm. paying $50 for a quick game like this might be a little bit too much.
Yeah, I would say for me, theme is a try, and the double luck factor. It's mm-hmm. for me, I don't care. I think it's fun, but you know, some people may not like it. Mm-hmm. Deny points?
I'm not sure if I have any deny points. I worry that with repeated plays, what people are saying about it, not like our listener who wrote in and said, is it still awesome? That the awesomeness might sort of start to wear off over time.
Mm-hmm.
That it might be one of those things where after 6 months of playing this a lot with your gaming group, when you suggest it, it might become, we can, but it's just going to be kind of the same.
Mm.
But having said that, I sort of feel that way about Dominion.
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
I sort of feel like I don't play Dominion nearly as much anymore because I feel like that, even with the expansions, can feel a little bit samey sometimes. So, you?
Games should not come in tins.
You're anti-tin.
I hate tins.
Okay. Well, that's so. But I think overall, my rating for the game is at least a try plus. It's
in the old form.
In the old form.
I would say buy. I think it's fun and unique. And so,
all right. So that is Couriers from WizKids. Check it out.
All right, it's time for the Game On Inbox, where we read your missives that have been sent to us through the couriers of the internet. What?
Missives?
Yes. Verily, what ho.
That Hedwig the Owl has dropped on into our doorway. Go ahead.
Harry Potter. I still have not seen either of the 7th movie parts.
No, I saw the first one. I haven't seen the second one.
Well, it's like I read the book. I'm like, I can wait. You know,
I'm not to go on too much of a rabbit trail here, but I'm in a weird spot right now because my son is reading the first. He's on the second book. He's mm-hmm. 8. He's on the second book, right? But I need to know when I want him to stop reading the books. Not that I'm trying to stifle book my two. Kid or anything. Well, but you know, they get kind of dark, you know. And
book two gets pretty dark.
Yeah, I know. So I got to be careful about just, you know, trying to.
If not book two, stop him after book two.
Okay, I think that's probably good. You know, give him a couple years just to mature and everything. Yeah.
But after he's read books one and two, good luck having that conversation when he knows there are five other ones.
Yeah, well, he definitely knows. Yeah.
Yeah. So have fun. So emailed. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
This comes from True Dungeon Game Master Brian Symington that we mentioned last episode. He says, "Hey guys, I got to see Cody and his better half in the dungeon, but I didn't run into John. I hope you guys had a great con." We did.
It was a lot of fun.
"I thought Gen Con went really well for the most part. The crowds were big and excited, and the staff and volunteers were friendly. The construction in the area was a hassle, and it was hard getting used to the new areas in the convention center." Agreed. But hopefully this new construction will be gone.
And that was just outdoor construction. Yeah, the convention center itself, there was no construction.
It was weird, though, you know, like areas that were previously walls were now entryways.
And yeah.
That was kind of odd. Here are some con highlights for me. He mentions True Dungeon. He had a great time both DMing and playing in the dungeons this year, even though Smoke killed me when I went through his dungeon. Smoke is the big red dragon. Who I killed. Yeah, well, actually, done. He killed me. My party killed him, so yay. The Orc Stomp, a 5K fun run held on both Thursday and Friday mornings. I hurt my knee in the flight in, so I couldn't run, but I volunteered for it. On Thursday, we had an actual orc motivating the runners by telling them he would eat the last place finisher.
Nice.
Very nice. Quarriers, Dominion with Dice. How can you not love this game? See?
Indeed.
See, right there? The dice are beautiful, and I think the mechanics of the game work well. Other games I picked up, Hike. Which is a card game we have a review copy of. It's a light card game where you follow suits and play special cards. Beware the poop card, which attracts bugs. Okay. And the litter card, which can never be played.
Because littering is not...
That's right. Yes. But pooping, that's encouraged. Simpleton's BC, a card game where you play Neanderthal and you can hunt, gather, raid other players, or defend against their raids. What is currency in this game? Rocks, of course.
Aha.
And then Innovation with its first expansion, both for a combined total of $32. Can't beat Sunday deals.
So, wow,
like we
nice.
Tell you, listeners, Sunday is the day to buy.
Yep.
He says the only real low light was the Fantasy Flight booth. The games are great and the staff was very friendly, but they were ineffective and unable to solve any of my problems. Oh, wow. For example, the newest Adventure Pack expansion for the Lord of the Rings LCG was released the first day and they sold out of it. On the first day. Come on. I was told I could buy it at my FLGS, but I said, I'm not at my FLGS, I'm here. Of course, when I got home, my FLGS was already sold out. All in all, it was a great experience and I look forward to next year. Only 51 weeks away. Hope to see you then. Brian. I think it's a little more than 50. Well, probably now it's 51 weeks
because
Gen Con's later next year.
But
not to split hairs.
And I'm sorry you had a bad experience at the Fantasy Flight booth, but come on.
It's Fantasy Flight.
And it's Gen Con. You gotta. I know he had a hurt knee, so you know he probably wasn't able to run into the dealer hall as fast as he wanted to there. But that's tough. You got to get those deals on the first day. It's tough. So thanks for the email, Brian. Next email is from Wade Kemper. The title of this email is Gen Con!
Oh, man, you just broke some levels there.
That's okay. I'm the editor, so it's all right for me to do that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He says, "Hey, guys, your old pal Wade, he who has the 4E game and emails about it." He should have his own segment.
That's true.
"I'm writing on the heels of your cool Gen Con recap, and I have a follow-up question to ask. I'm planning to attend Gen Con next year. Let me give you a rundown of my situation so I can give you the question some context. Number one," he says, "I'm 35 and have never been to Gen Con or any convention for that matter."
Wow.
Wow.
Come on, Wade.
Poor guy. Number two, "I live in northern central Maryland." Go Ravens.
Hey, sorry about your football team.
Oh, sorry about that. Ooh.
We're too busy stealing yours. Go Colts.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
"I clocked the drive at around 9 hours. Why? Because, number three, I'm deathly afraid to fly." Yeah, nothing wrong with that. That's okay.
Get sedated.
Yeah, you know, like B.A. like B.A. Baracus on the A-team.
That's right.
Drug you, yeah. Number four, "I might be going alone, but there's a chance I might have my family near or with me. By next summer, I'll have a nearly 5-year-old and a nearly 2-year-old. He says, "I know, red flag." Yeah. Number five, "I'm a school teacher, so unlike Origins, Gen Con falls right in the middle of my summer off, so an extended trip is not out of the question." So let's see. So being from Maryland, I'm assuming that's probably one of the states where the school starts in September.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Now here in Indiana,
it's unnatural.
It starts way early in August. So number six, "If I can go next year, I don't know the next time I'll be able to go again. So it's potentially my only Gen Con. So on to my question. what do I do? I figured while the convention is fresh on your mind, and yeah, you can maybe dole out a primer or primer.
Primer.
Okay. For the potential first time or only time Gen Con attendee, I can't imagine I'm the only one who's in this situation. Kind of like a Gen Con bucket list. And so that's from Wade Kemper. And well, let's see, Wade.
I think that's something we may put in our convention guide for next year.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, first time, only time thing. But I mean, what do you want us to say? Come to Gen Con.
Just come to Gen Con. Yeah.
Get the family truckster or get yourself good and drunk and get on the plane and join us in the gaming capital of the world.
Yeah. And, you know, and we have done lots of convention coverage here, so we don't want to you know, irritate all the people who aren't able to come to Gen Con mm-hmm. or are sick of us talking about it. But they did have like a babysitting service this year where they brought in
they had
a whole room where they had brought in a professional babysitter.
Yeah, the cages had water and food. It was very humane.
There were no cages. But that didn't seem like that was that full. So I'm not sure how many people took advantage of that. You know, I know that it's, you know, you bring your 5 and your 2-year-old, you may not want to leave them with strangers, but, yeah. But they're, you know, looking around the dealer hall and stuff, you can take strollers in there. It's not great, but you know, you might get some looks and everything, but, or maybe one of those backpack things for your kid. You know, you
can, I don't have kids, but just the paranoid person who is like, man, if that backpack like snaps or the ones where you wear the baby kind of in front of you and the baby's facing you, it's like, what if I trip and fall and I'm just gonna like smash my child? I think about these things.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know? Yeah. Best way to do that is to not do that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, sure. But yeah, you should come, Wade, and Raven sucks. So
all right.
That's all I got.
Nice.
Okay, last email we have today is from Mr. Adam Brocker. And he writes, I just listened to your Gen Con podcast and really enjoyed it, but I did have a comment on the Gen Con library. I really liked the setup of multiple tickets for the library, even though I was against it at first.
Really? Oh, I'm interested to hear.
And he lists the benefits. Okay. He said, number one, it cuts the cost since you only buy what you need. It may be very pricey if they sold it as one big ribbon. I'd say they should have the option, though, because if you're going to play every day, then it costs more to buy 2 tickets a day.
So you're saying that they should have like a badge for the whole con,
mm-hmm.
and then it should be like at a discounted rate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you say either it's $20 for the ribbon or $6 per ticket, or $25 for the ribbon and $6 per ticket.
Because right now, if you got 4 days worth of that rib of those
$48,
$40, right? Mm-hmm. It was
$6 a ticket, and there were 2 tickets a day, right?
No, the day ticket was $4.
Oh, I see. So yeah, $40.
So $40, but if you had a I wouldn't want to spend an additional $40 for a badge like that. So, yeah, okay, 25 then. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but the second one, he's got me on this one. You are guaranteed a spot to play. This was a major concern Saturday evening since the library was packed. There was still a spot for everyone, but the library did sell out. So that's something I didn't even consider was that with this – well, that's why they charge per ticket is so they can make sure that there's enough room. Because if they had the ribbon, you know, just like the come in anytime during the weekend ribbon.
Would they like oversell the ribbons? They would, right?
Yeah.
They would, you know, it's not like they're selling individual
because this
space.
Isn't like the boardroom at Origins where you have this just cavernous space.
Right,
and
it's
you
a
know,
smaller space.
Right, so, good call.
That's a good point.
He said at Origins, at Origins is not much of a concern since there are less people and more space for the boardroom. Thanks, Adam. Thanks for bringing that up. That's something, they need a bigger space anyway.
Yeah.
I just don't think they understand how many just people come and just play board games all weekend.
Yeah.
And there's a
they're
lot.
Starting to understand that though. You know?
They're getting
if
there.
They could get the 500 ballroom back into play as a board gaming room, I think that would be a perfect size. I mean, it's still that would be huge, but it would be able to accommodate everybody and that would be fun. So I believe that is the Game On inbox. Thanks, as always, for your emails. And you can always reach us if you have any questions or comments. You can check us out at the Game On inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Well done. We also have a voicemail line, the lovely Google voice number.
Uh-huh.
You can call in and Flo will answer your call and take your voicemail. And that is?
4138-GAME-ON.
4138-GAME-ON.
Cop showed up, and at that point, I had the right to remain silent, but I didn't have the ability. The cop says, Mr. White, you are being charged with drunk in public. I was like, hey. I was drunk in a bar. They threw me. into public.
Now, one aspect of games that that I really like, and I think is kind of underutilized, is gaming in public. And I don't even mean gaming outside of your home so much, because, you know, I don't really consider, like, gaming in a game store, you know, gaming in public. But I'm talking about, you know, going to a park or a bar or somewhere and playing. Because one of my favorite things, and I know this baffles John at times, is like taking a lightish game, taking like Haggis or something, or some card game, and going to a pub and playing it. I think that's fun. The atmosphere is neat. There's lots of people. It's cool.
There's food.
There's food. Yeah. Excitement. You know, yeah. But it was a topic I brought up because, you know, we've not discussed it, and I know some of our friends over at Pulp Gamer are part of this Play in Public campaign. I'll throw a link to that in the show notes. So just something I wanted to talk about. What are your base feelings on playing games outside of kind of your gaming safe spots, whether that be your home or where your gaming group meets or a game store?
You know, I don't have any problem with it. I think it's fun, especially in sort of the bar restaurant atmosphere. Because mm-hmm. I think back to back around Final Four time in March, we went to a barbecue place that had a bar to it, and we sat there and had some food. And you brought ice dice with mm-hmm. you. And we played some games of that, and that's a lot of fun. One nice thing about playing those lighter games in a bar or a restaurant setting is that they tend to draw some attention, you know, and usually in a good way, because a bar is kind of a feel good place. Yeah. You know, most of the time people aren't going to be, I take that back. Sometimes people can be total jerks at bars, but, but you know, if everybody's having a good time, you know, then usually people are nice to
Butler
you.
Butler won the game, so everyone was in a good mood.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you might have people
except
saying,
except
oh,
the
what's
bartender.
That?
He was a Duke fan for no reason.
For no reason.
No one likes Duke.
No one.
God hates Duke. You know?
Wow.
It's in the Bible. Find it.
Hezekiah, chapter 6.
That's right.
All right. Well, but that atmosphere, though, is one that I think you get a lot of people who, you know, kind of peek over your shoulder and say, hey, what you doing there? And that can be a good way to sort of evangelize the hobby a little bit, you know, rather than just bringing out a deck of regular cards, you know, bring out something that's a little bit more fun. You know, but I think you... What do you think? I mean, that would be the place where I would want to, as far as public goes, that I would want to do the most. Because mm-hmm. other locations, I think you might run into some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always a little... I really like doing it, but I'm always tentative because I don't know if there's an etiquette to it. Like, I don't know if you need to ask beforehand or something. You know, like... Because
yeah.
if you're playing... You know, I don't really advocate taking big... You know, longer games. Like I wouldn't even say like take Settlers out to a pub or something. You know, it's not that big of a footprint, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
You know, are they worried about turning tables over? Sort of. You know, what's I don't know the etiquette there, or maybe you just. I think either way, you tip really nicely. You know, just because you're. I don't know if you're making a scene or whatnot, but.
Yeah.
It's just I really like that atmosphere, and I think a lot of games really play off of it. Like I know at Gen Con on Wednesday night, a lot of people played Red Dragon Inn at Scotty's Brew House.
Yeah.
And you can even play like a drinking game if everyone involved wants to do that, you know. But I know people who've played games at parks, and I've never really played a game outside. Oh. I think you have to really pick your battles there because, you know, it's like...
TI-3 at the top of the
exactly.
playground.
Yeah, you know, stiff wind picks up and you know you're done.
Yeah.
The library is, your public library is becoming a big thing. You know, you have, of course, Scott Nicholson, friend of the show, Scott Nicholson.
Okay, now I just want to, and we should maybe bring your wife in to talk uh-huh. about this more, but I am a little confused about libraries. Maybe you can
show. Well, there are books there, right?
Yeah, well, see, well, okay, well, there you go. You actually just made my point for me, okay?
Uh-huh.
When I think of a library, I think of a place to go where there's books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these days, a lot of times, like, computers, you know, they'll have, for internet sure. access, folks who don't have high-speed internet access, stuff like that. But this whole idea, like, Scott Nicholson wrote a whole book called Everybody Plays at the Library
mm-hmm.
that's about gaming programs in libraries. And I guess I just have never thought of a gaming program as having anything to do with a library. Is that just, is that something new, or is it, maybe I should read Scott's book and probably tell
me. Here's what Kaylin tells me, and it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Is that libraries are now pushing to be this thing called a third space. Where you have your first space is your home, your second space is your work, and your third space is blah. In olden days, you know, 50 years ago, that may have been like...
The pub.
The pub, oh, or the church, or the community center thing. But that's kind of gone away now with a lot of the technological advances. It's kind of like homework. You know, they're really pushing for the library to be that third space and more of like a community center, because, you know, I've seen some of the things she's brought home, like the programs that go on in the library system she works in.
Yeah.
And they have like, there's not many game, like board game event nights, but they have like Wii tournaments and they have all of these other things. Like, I would never expect there to be a library. So I think that's the rationale behind that, not to get into like a library topic.
No, but I think that's a good topic. Mm-hmm. I think the thing I always think about with libraries is I think education, you know, I think that you're going there because reading is an educational thing. Well, yeah. It's not always an educational thing, but you know, that it seems more academic than if you were going to a bar or a restaurant. And so I think about libraries organizing game programs seems not academic, you know, unless you were specifically doing educational games, you know, it just seems like just throwing open a door and saying, we're going to have a board game night just seems... Again, I don't know anything about it. So
this may be a topic we should table, because I think this could
you're
be
probably pretty, right.
We'll
get Scott on the show. Maybe he'd come on the show. Come on the show? Maybe he'd come on the show.
We could at least get my wife on the show.
Absolutely.
But what I'm thinking is, it's like outside of like the school, you know, university libraries are going from a more academic center to more of a community center. Okay. I think that's clear if you walk into most any library.
Yeah.
It's the way they organize things.
Well, our church, my church meets in a library, the large central library right in downtown Indianapolis. And there's a 300-seat auditorium that's attached to the library. And they have, I agree with you, they have all kinds of music programs and theater. And they'll show movies on Sunday afternoon, you know, old movies, even new movies. I guess I just never thought of a library that way. I'm always thinking of like more like when I was in college and I'm, you know, down at the chemistry library studying.
So you would not take a game to a library and play it?
I would not, but I mean, I guess I would feel like, well, you know, I guess, like I just said, I wouldn't feel like that's the place for a game. And then I would also be worried about noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And I brought that up to my wife, and Kaylin said that that's kind of a thing, a stigma they're trying to get rid of too.
The be quiet in the library,
the shushing librarian sort of thing.
Interesting.
Now, so what? If I can ask you, what public places are you cool bringing a game, and what kind? And as a second question to that, how heavy of a game are you willing to play in public like that?
I think that for me, it's almost just the way I'm thinking of it in my mind. It's almost limited just to light games and card games and things like that. I can't see myself taking a big chunky board game like a Merchants and Marauders or a Mansions of Madness or something
Twilight
like that.
Imperium.
Twilight Imperium. Or one of those big games to any kind of a public place. Because it's probably more of a time factor than anything else. Because if I go to a restaurant, I'm not going to spend 3 hours in a restaurant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm out for the night and that's where we decided to make our hangout spot, you know, and we'll keep the drinks flowing and we'll just hang out here in the booth, you know.
Yeah.
But even then, I couldn't see myself, you know, playing a full-on board game. The only exception I can think of is that when we played Tales of the Arabian Nights at Gen Con, we went to the Clodagh Irish Pub, and we sat in sort of this booth thing, and we played through that full board game. And that was really fun, but it just felt like, oh, it's Gen Con. I wouldn't normally do this.
Yeah, I agree.
So and that's probably just me... I don't know, just me. I'm not sure if that's... I don't think that the public places would have a problem with that, as long as you're still buying stuff and making money.
I think that's the key, and I know this really hasn't been a how-to, and I'm not even sure if I wanted it to be, but, you know, to me, I think, you know, tipping well and having a good rapport with your waiter, waitress, server, whatever you want to call them, that's good, and I don't know. I think it's something that... I really want to get some feedback on this, because it's something where I think a lot of people are doing it. Like, there's even a gaming cafe here in town. It's not that good, but I mean, I don't think so, but, but the idea is there. And I know, like, in Toronto, you know, they have that Snakes and Lattes. I think the Spiel guys did a great, kind of conversation with them. And, you know, I think that kind of that meshing of games and food and drink and being out in public can be a really neat thing. I mean, I know overseas in Europe, it's a much bigger thing than it is here. You know, a lot of people do that. So, listeners, I'm going to throw this one to you. I'd like you to send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Just making sure you're awake.
Yep, yep.
And if you play in public, if you play in the library or at the bar or anywhere else.
At the pool.
At the pool. let us know, because I'm curious. And I'm curious to know what you play. Because, you know, there, like I said, there's not only the location, there's also the weight requirement. Or, you know, it's like, would you bring...
The weight requirement?
Well, is it a heavy game? Is it a light game?
Oh,
not a physical weight.
Okay.
Or you know, is there... Couriers is a light game. Would you bring Couriers to a bar? Would you bring 100 and her custom dice to, you know?
See, I would worry about getting food on them, food and drinks spilled on the game. I was at lunch today, and mm-hmm. I was at a Chinese buffet, and I was there by myself. I know it sounds sad, but I was
oh, really?
Well, but I was specifically there because I wanted to. I had just gotten the new game Rune Age, which we'll talk about in a later episode. That's a deck building card game from Fantasy Flight, and I wanted to read the rules to it. And so I just wanted to, you know, go off by myself to a place. And so I sat there reading the rules of this game, and I'm kind of organizing the cards in front of me while I'm trying to eat my rice and egg rolls and stuff. And it was really tricky because I was worried about spilling food on the game. So, you know, that's another thing that gives me pause about, you know, playing at restaurants is spilling stuff on them.
Yeah. There's a lot of factors there, be it egg rolls or be it social stigma or squatting, you know, just being there too long.
Yeah. What are some other public places we can think of there? I mean, I guess I think mainly of restaurants and bars. Mm-hmm. Those would be the normal, you know, and parks, I guess.
Yeah. You know, like I mentioned, libraries or let's say other. I know my church has organized game nights in the past. I mean, it's not gamers organizing them. So, you know, me and the other couple gamer folks at our church, you know, we're bringing the good stuff.
Yeah,
and then you know, they have Yahtzee laid out, they have Monopoly laid out, you know.
So. Well, the game on game night is at a church.
That's
so.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot out there. So I'm curious because I think we'll get at least a few good stories from listeners. So we'll do a follow up on this. And
if we can't say anything interesting, then we rely on you listeners to provide interesting stuff for us to say.
Yeah, like I said, this was odd for me because it's a topic I want to talk about, but I don't know how much I have to put, you know, am I weird for wanting to game in a pub, you know, if play Three Dragon Annie in a pub, you know?
Yeah.
And mentioning that, one thing that maybe you have to get around is you have to convince the owner of the establishment that's not gambling, because you can't just gamble, you know, you can't, you know, you may be playing it with chips or whatever.
Yeah, try putting wits and wagers down at
at
a bar,
exactly.
You know,
you got the big old mat. Yeah. But you know,
you wear the little visor.
Well, Three Dragon Annie, you've got, you know, everyone, you got these chips for gold, and you know, you could have the owner coming, you can't gamble here. It's like, oh, we're not gambling, it's fake. It's like, well, you know, so there's that whole other mechanic there. So maybe I'm weird, but I think playing games in pubs is cool.
I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it's a good way to broadcast the hobby to other people, because I think you will get people that are interested, mm-hmm. and will, you know, you'll get maybe the detractors, but you'll get some people that'll peek in and might want to join too. So
send us an email, give us a call, and we'd like to hear what you have to say on gaming in public.
In public.
Thanks for listening to another Touchdown episode.
Touchdown?
With all the Peyton Manning talk at the beginning.
Oh. You're...
Thanks for another injured neck episode of Game Off Cody and John.
Is it Peyton his neck that's injured?
Yeah, it's something about his neck.
Terrible.
It's just terrible. But anyway, so if the Colts lose a bunch of games, we'll play a lot more board games.
Okay.
But we thank you for listening as always. We want to mention that...
You're creating like Colts enemies now. Because they're going to root against the Colts, so that we'll talk about more board games.
I mean, if they hate the show, they
okay. There you go.
16-0, right?
If you hate the show, root for the Colts.
But anyway, we want to let you know that the Game On Dice are still available. It's a great way to support the show and get some really cool dice in the process. So if you go to our website, gameonpodcast.com, there's a link right at the top that says Game On Dice. Click that bad boy and get your Game On Support package. I think that's the official title.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, fancy. You support the show and you get cool dice. How can you go wrong?
They're blue, they're gold, mm-hmm. they're sparkly.
And there's a Game On the 6, not the 1, because when you see our logo, we want you to cheer and not curse on, unless you're playing like a war game and you need low.
Don't play that.
Then just don't play war games. So.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, join us in 2 weeks where we're going to be talking a lot of other great stuff. We tabled a couple of GM Academy questions that we got. So we're going to do a little bit more of an expanded GM Academy in the next episode. Also going to have some reviews.
Half the people just cheered. Half the people just groaned.
Well, the people that groaned just turned the podcast off. So yeah. We'll see them next time. But we got a lot of great stuff for you coming up. And we love making this podcast for you. And until next time.
Game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.